The Locked On Giants podcast is brought to you in part by BlueChew.com. Visit BlueChew.com for more information and to take advantage of their special offer for Locked On Giants listeners. Enter the promo code Locked On at checkout to get your first shipment for only $5 shipping and handling. That's BlueChew.com. BlueChew.com.
You are Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giant fans. Welcome to another edition of Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast family, your team every day. My name is Patricia Traina, and I cover your New York Giants for a variety of places. Follow me on Twitter at Patricia_Traina, T-R-A-I-N-A, and that's where you can find links to all my work. And we are currently in the true off-season of the NFL calendar. There's about 6 weeks or so before the start of training camp, so we are coming to you on a summer schedule, if you will, three shows a week. And I'm happy to have on the line with me for this show John Butchko, who is the host of the Locked On Jets podcast. And John, first off, welcome to the program. So glad to have you with us.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here.
Thanks so much. So anyway, we are going to be doing, as I mentioned to you guys on Locked On Giants, we're going to be doing, we're going to get some of the Locked On hosts, maybe some of the beat writers from other teams, and we're going to start previewing some of the Giants' 2019 opponents, just to kind of get you ready for the season. Then, of course, once we get into the season, we'll probably have the crossover Wednesday shows where we'll, at that point, know the rosters, the matchups, and so forth. So, John, let's start off with the Jets. I mean, really a crazy offseason for them. I mean, how is the team kind of, you know, taking to all this with the upheaval that they had at the general manager spot and, you know, the new head coach, Adam Gase, in there, you know, Greg Williams in there? I mean, that's a lot of personalities brought in.
Yeah, it's a lot to process. And I think that they ended up hiring a guy in Joe Douglas as their general manager, somebody who's been universally praised. I mean, people say it's a great hire. It's just a very odd path they took to get him, where you leave the old general manager in place. You let him run a pretty pivotal offseason where he's spending, you know, around $125 million in guaranteed money. And then he's running the coaching search along with the owner, Chris Johnson. And then suddenly after the draft, you let him go. And it's odd. It's certainly a strange set of circumstances. I said on Locked On Jets that, you know, there's an expression that it's not about the destination, it's the journey. I think for the Jets, this offseason has been more about the destination and getting Joe Douglas as the general manager, a guy who's very well respected within the NFL, because the journey was about as strange as anything I've ever seen.
Yeah, and of course, now the Texans, they went and fired their general manager. And it's funny because I don't know that they're getting as much heat as the Jets got from the New York media.
No, and I guess that comes with the territory. With New York, you're obviously under a bigger microscope, and I think probably just the relative success. You know, the Texans won their division last year, whereas the Jets have, it's been since 2015 since they won six games in the season. So I think that probably played into it a little bit. But I mean, both teams, I think the set of decisions puzzles me up for both teams. The Jets ended up coming out of it pretty well. I mean, we'll see how Joe Douglas is. I don't want to guarantee, this guy's never been a general manager in the NFL before, but I haven't found a person who has a bad thing to say about him. So we'll see how the Texans come out of it.
Okay. Well, let's look at the Jets and where they stand right now. And we'll start with the offensive side of the ball. It's year two of the Sam Darnold era. Where has he made the biggest jump from last year to at least through the spring?
Well, I think, you know, it's kind of started near the end of the season. Things just kind of started slowing down for him. He was injured around November and missed a couple games heading into the bye and then a little bit after the bye. And I think just down the stretch last season, he started things really started clicking for him. He was a guy when he was at USC, was always capable of kind of improvising when things broke down and keeping plays alive. It was one of the things that I think made him one of the top prospects in the 2018 draft. So I think it was he really started making more plays near the end of the year. The Jets were not a very talented team last year. And, you know, I look back, and especially I look at week 15 when they played Houston and week 16 when they played Green Bay, and they lost both games. They were both tight games. But, you know, I looked at the Jets were productive on offense in both contests. And, you know, when I looked back at those games, the offensive line was not doing a great job. The receivers outside of maybe Robbie Anderson a few times here or there were not getting great separation. I mean, Darnold was really kind of carrying this team on his back. And yes, they lost both games, but the team really, if you look at the way the defense played both weeks, I mean, they were getting torched through the air by, with the corners. And as I said, the offensive personnel was not playing that well. I mean, he started kind of taking ownership of the team down the stretch.
And that, of course, is a big, you know, a pivotal point for a young quarterback, because when he makes that offense his own, you know, that's when he starts to, you know, really show that he belongs. Now, in Adam Gase, you know, I believe Adam is an offensive-minded coach. And what kind of changes has he made to the Jets' offense based on your observations?
Well, you know, I think it's tough to say until the games. I always say that, you know, I never want to read too much into anything until I see the games begin. But I think that he's going to put more on Darnold's plate. And I say this, I'm pretty comfortable saying this because that's kind of how my understanding as I watch Miami and as I spoke with some people I know who followed the Dolphins. The offense the Jets ran last year, I think at points, was very restricted, where Darnold did not have a lot of freedom to do things at the line. The Jets were pretty frequently running into loaded boxes instead of checking out, allowing the quarterback to check out of the plays. So I think it'll be little things like that where he's going to allow Darnold more freedom at the line to kind of decipher what's going on and make adjustments as necessary. I think he's also going to run more plays that kind of take some of the pressure off Darnold. You know, I mentioned the end of last season, and one observation I had was essentially the Jets offense only succeeded last year when the quarterback was making plays with, and this is probably a slight exaggeration, but it seemed to me the old Jets offense could only move when the quarterback was making plays with the pocket collapsing and making tight window throws. I mean, I think you're going to see a scheme that's going to be built to help the quarterback out a little bit more. You know, you'll see more RPOs that are well designed. You'll see more the screen game involved more. I think that was the genesis of some of the offseason moves they made, particularly bringing in Jamison Crowder and Le'Veon Bell as a receiver out of the backfield. So I just think that the system's probably going to be more quarterback friendly than the one we saw last year. The offensive coordinator a year ago was Jeremy Bates, who was he was the quarterback's coach in 2017. Prior to that, he'd been out of the NFL since I think 2012. And I said at times it was pretty clear that he had been out of the NFL for 5 years, just because you did not see a lot of the modern wrinkles of today's NFL offenses with what the Jets were running in 2018.
And, you know, you mentioned Le'Veon Bell. I know there was a big, you know, offseason, actually, there were a couple stories about him. I don't believe he participated in many of the OTAs. And there was this report, I believe, by the Daily News, Manish Mehta, reporting that Adam Gase did not want Le'Veon Bell. I mean, how has that kind of smoothed out, or is it still kind of rocky as far as that goes?
Well, I mean, I think it's easy to say, right? They say everything's fine. I mean, it's easy to say that in June. We'll see what happens when the season we get into the regular season. But I heard one analyst say something that I agreed with, is Adam Gase may have been against the idea of signing Le'Veon Bell in the offseason, but he's going to learn to love Le'Veon Bell when he sees all the, like, the little things he's going to bring in terms of, you know, he's a guy you can put in the slot who's going to help the quarterback identify coverages. I think he's going to be a really solid weapon for the Jets. So, you know, it's always tough to say. And Adam Gase is a guy who obviously had a reputation in Miami of not always getting along with everybody. And we've seen that here with the Jets. I mean, part of the reason the Jets changed general managers was that he did not see eye to eye with the way that general manager was working. So, you know, everything's fine now. I think there's potential for some very good things. if the Jets lose two or three games in a row in October, could things change? Well, that remains to be seen.
And if when you look at this Jets offense, where do you see the strength and where do you see still the biggest concern?
Well, I think that they did a good job upgrading the skill positions. It's not a spectacular group of skill players, but I think Bell should bring a lot to this team. I mean, it's kind of tough to say how a year off is going to impact him. My personal view on this is that whenever a running back has rest, it tends to be a good thing. You know, there's a lot of debate should the, and you know, we kind of touched on it with, did Adam Gase want Le'Veon Bell? You know, there's a debate. Do you pay running backs big money in the NFL? Do you invest a lot? And, you know, I think Le'Veon Bell's not a guy who made sense for every team, but the Jets needed to upgrade this group of skill players they had around Sam Darnold. And they had a lot of salary cap space, so their best mechanism, he was really the only premium player who was available in the free agent market. Now, if you talk about the trade market, okay, you know, maybe there were some other options out there. But the Jets are also a team that was not really, they were already down a few draft picks because of the trade they made with the Colts to get Sam Darnold. So they really were not in a position to trade away picks. I think Bell's going to be a big plus for the team. And I think he's going to take pressure off everybody else. You know, Robbie Anderson is a really good deep threat. I think that the Jets will probably try and establish the run with Bell early in games this year and try and get, you know, a little safety to creep up and maybe leave Anderson with one-on-one matchups. Chris Herndon, the tight end, had a really good rookie season for a fourth-round rookie. I mean, he was probably, his numbers were around median for a starter. That's really good for a fourth-round rookie. He's a guy who could be a mismatch. You know, he's kind of the new breed of NFL tight ends where he's an athlete who creates problems for defenses trying to cover him. Quincy Enunwa is a solid receiver. I kind of view him as a hybrid type player where he's kind of like part running back. He's good with the ball in his hands, but he also can make plays down the field as a receiver. So not a spectacular. I mean, I'm not going to say that this is like an elite group of skill players, but it's something you can work with, which is more than you can say about a number of recent Jets teams. Now, the weakness, I think the offensive line is a big question mark. And I think that if you look at this offensive line, if everything breaks right, like everybody hits their ceiling, this is probably a middle of the pack unit. And I think the center position in particularly is awfully shaky. The Jets, you know, I just talked about their salary cap space. And this is the thing that makes no sense to me, is that there were essentially two premium free agent centers hitting the market this year. There was Paradis and there was Morse. And the Jets had the second most cap space in the league. The only team with more cap space was the Colts, who did not need a center. How the Jets did not get one of those premium centers is puzzling to me. You know, this is an offensive line that's not—it's not a great offensive line. It's not the worst offensive line in the league, but it's also not a line with a tremendous amount of upside because the youngest guy is Brandon Schell, who is 27, I believe. So there's not—you know—there's not really a lot of room for hope on the offensive line. And it's the type of thing that could hold this offense back.
Interesting stuff there. You know, it seems, I mean, Giant fans can certainly relate to the offensive line issues. You know, for years, the Giants, their offensive line shaky on paper, looks good, but I guess we'll find out. You know, I mean, as you know, teams, you know, they cut players and rosters will change, but can't fix everything in one offseason. As you know, it's going to be interesting for sure there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think that's one of the biggest problems with the old general manager, Mike Maccagnan, is his offensive line was built largely on reclamation projects from other teams. You know, he's always trying to get guys to bounce back after coming off injuries, which it's not, I mean, you can get players that way, but it seemed like that was his entire strategy. In 5 years, he drafted three offensive linemen in total. And two of those three offensive linemen were in the fifth round. So there was not a big investment on the offensive line by the previous GM.
Wow. Giant fans are like, hold my beer on that. All right. We're going to take a short break, come back, and we're going to talk Jets defense. Folks, stay with us. Welcome back to Locked On Giants. You're with Patricia Traina and special guest John Butchko, who is the host of Locked On Jets. And we're breaking down the New York Jets, who this year play the Giants. The game set, I don't have the date in front of me. I think I want to say it's later in the season. I know they play them first game in the preseason. Always a fun time when the two teams get together. And John, let's talk now about the defensive side. Now, you know, I think we've got to start with Greg Williams, who, quite frankly, I was surprised the Jets hired him because, you know, he's kind of an alpha male, very, you know, aggressive, go-getter type. You know, Adam Gase has that reputation as well. How is that relationship working? Is it where Gase is letting, you know, Williams basically do what he needs to do with the defense? Is he having a say in it? How is that working as far as you know?
Gase has referred to Williams as the head coach of the defense. As you mentioned earlier, Gase is very much an offensive-minded head coach, so he kind of just wants to – he doesn't really want to be very active on the defense. He's going to let Williams do what he wants. Now, you know, as I said with Bell, I mean, these are two guys who are very feisty personalities. You know, very easy for things to go – for everybody to be getting along in June. How will things work? Jets lose two or three games in a row, that remains to be seen. But there are rumors out there that one of the reasons Gase got the job was that the Jets wanted whoever they hired as their head coach to bring Williams in as their defensive coordinator. So there's a question, was this an arranged marriage? Which, again, is something that could come into play. But the Jets were very focused on getting a head coach with an offensive background to help Sam Darnold. So they wanted somebody that they could trust to run the defense. You know, sometimes these things work well, sometimes they don't. I guess we'll have to wait and see.
And how has the defense been different under him as opposed to when Todd Bowles was here? I think he was in charge of the defense, being a defensive-minded coach. So how has Greg Williams changed that defense?
You know, I think it's probably more temperament than it is scheme-wise, because both Bowles and Williams are guys who like to blitz heavily and play a lot of man coverage. Bowles is a much more laid-back guy, and you know, I think you could see points where that worked against the Jets. I'm not saying that laid-back coaches can't work in the NFL, but it got to the point where, I mean, it was just a consistent thing where you'd hear stories about guys being late for meetings, guys being late for practice, skipping meetings. It seemed like a never-ending assortment of these stories. So I think it's probably a good thing for the Jets to get somebody who's a little more intense in there. So I think I'm not sure it's necessarily something that you're going to see on the field in terms of, you know, a game plan on Sunday. I think it's more just their personality and how they try and get the best out of their players.
And let's talk personnel. Where do you see the biggest, you know, upgrade? From the outside looking in, you guys got Quinnen Williams, a guy who I really wanted. I was hoping he would fall to the Giants. Is he the biggest upgrade you think they've made, or have they made a bigger upgrade somewhere else maybe?
Yeah, I think that would be a good place to start. You know, you put him next to Leonard Williams, and, you know, you've got two really very talented defensive or interior lineman types. So, you know, and I think, you know, Leonard Williams has been somewhat underwhelming on the stat sheet. And I think part of that's just the Jets have not surrounded him with a ton of talent. So that's, that would certainly be a place to look. They're going to be very strong up front, up the middle. I think another place they've upgraded is the linebacker position, where they brought in C.J. Mosley to replace Darren Lee. Darren Lee, I think, was just a disappointment. He did not live up to the first-round billing at all. His third year last year was better than his first two. I don't think he was a huge – I think his first 2 years he was a huge liability for the defense, especially in the run game. I think last year there was some improvement, but he was not the type of guy who was moving the needle at all. Now, I will say this. I did not like the contract the Jets gave C.J. Mosley. I think that they may come back to regret the amount of money they're paying Mosley. But I do think that if you're just looking purely in terms of football, there's an upgrade and a pretty big one.
And same question as I asked on the offense. Where do you see the strengths, the area that they're really going to be good at? And where do you see the biggest concerns for this defense, talking unit-wide?
I think if you're talking about what this team's going to stop the run, I don't think many teams are going to be able to run on the Jets. You talk about the two Williamses, Steve McClendon, a quality nose tackle. You've got two excellent run-stopping linebackers in Mosley and Avery Williamson, and Jamal Adams, who is arguably the best run-stopping safety in football. Landon Collins, who a guy you know may have something to say about that, but I think Jamal Adams at the very least is a top two run-stopping football safety in football. So I mean, I think it's going to be very tough to run on the Jets. In terms of weakness, well, there are two spots, and they're probably the two spots you don't want to have a weakness on defense. I think the edge rusher spot is very shaky, and I think the corners back spot is very shaky. You look at edge rusher, they drafted Jachai Polite in the third round out of Florida, a guy who, if it was just based on his college performance, based on his college film, probably would have been a first-round pick. He had a terrible pre-draft process, bad combine. Apparently, the interviews with teams were terrible. It caused him to drop into the third round. The Jets spoke with him extensively. The Jets really did their homework. I kind of felt like the Jets were going to pick him going into the draft because of the extent to which the Jets were doing their homework on him. Is he going to be impact pass rusher day one? I think in a more ideal world, he'd start off as a situational guy who you would not expect much from. Outside of him, I mean, Jordan Jenkins had 7 sacks last year, but that's kind of a boom scenario. This is a guy, Jordan Jenkins is essentially a guy with a bull rush and not a whole lot else. After that, Brandon Copeland, who's kind of a journeyman. This is not a team with great... This team, if they're going to get pass rush, it's going to have to be from the interior guys, like the two Williamses. And then you look at the cornerback position. I got to be honest with you. I'm not sure I trust any of these corners. You have Trumaine Johnson, who was a big money free agent signing a year ago, who just had a horrible first season with the Jets. And really, it reminded me of Darrell Revis's last season with the Jets, where it looks like his speed is all gone. Just doesn't look like he has a lot left in the tank. The number two corner is Darryl Roberts, who is pushing 29 and has never been a starter in the NFL for a full season before. And then in the slots, they picked up a free agent Poole from Atlanta, who actually could be a decent slot corner. But I think you look at outside corners between Johnson and Roberts, it's a little shaky.
And then finally, when you look at this Jets team, what do you think are some realistic expectations, some issues they might create for teams, the record, one loss record, statistics, anything that might pop into your mind that you think might be within reach for this team?
Well, do I think, am I going to guarantee the Jets are a playoff team this year? No, I am not. But I think the Jets are a team that, if things break right for them, could conceivably be a playoff team. If the quarterback makes the leap year two, if Bell comes back and is something close to what he was in Pittsburgh, I think this could be a good team. They do have, now they have some pretty glaring weaknesses on defense, but this is also a team, if you look at their schedule, and I always hesitate before I look at schedules because you don't know who's going to be good, who's going to be bad, but if you look at the quarterbacks, especially down the stretch, they're not playing a ton of great teams with great quarterbacks. So if they can weather the first month and a half of the season, they could be in position to make a run in the second half of the year. I think that this is a team. My guess is that if everything goes wrong, they're probably 6-10. If everything goes right, they're probably 10-6 and right in the mix for a playoff spot. It's just a question, do they avoid injuries? Do they get a few lucky, a few good bounces of the ball late in games? I think that's a step up for the Jets because I don't think they're, like I said, this is a Jets team. I'm not guaranteeing they're going to the playoffs. I'm saying this is a team that could conceivably be a playoff team. I think you could say that about most teams in the NFL. I don't think you could say that about the Jets the last 2 years. I think heading into the last 2 years, the Jets were pretty clearly a bottom of the league team. So I do think they've made some improvements.
Well, certainly they have the Patriots in that division, the Bills in that division. I mean, the Patriots have just been so hard to knock off by any team. I mean, if you're talking about playoffs, I'm assuming you mean as a wild card, I would think, right?
Yes. I'm not going to say the Jets are going to beat the Patriots in the AFC, certainly. Although I think
you never know, though.
I've been around too long to predict that. I'll be pleasantly surprised if that happens.
Well, they said the same thing about the Giants in the Super Bowl, and they beat them twice, so it can be done. So anyway, tell all the folks on Locked On Giants what you got coming up and where they can find all your work.
So we're kind of in a summer schedule as long as you guys are. So we're probably going to be on 3 days a week on Locked On Jets. I write on SB Nation's Jets site, gangrenenation.com. So you can check out my, my written work there.
Okay. Awesome. And, again, I don't have the date in front of me. I want to say it's November that the Giants play the Jets, but it's always a fun game. And I think you were at the Jet game last year, right? The preseason game, you were there.
I was not. No, I was not. I was not. But I it's too bad. I kind of liked it the last couple of times when they played in December. You know, I always liked it when both teams had something on the line. Of course, there was the famous Christmas Eve game in 2011, which infamous from the Jets side, famous from the Giants side. And then 2015, not as significant historically, but the Jets did get some measure of revenge on the Giants. So I'm a little disappointed they didn't put this in December where, maybe both teams have something big on the line.
Yeah, and what's funny is every time the Giants play the AFC East, they either have a coaching change or they go to the Super Bowl. So what's it going to be this year, if anything? Certainly going to be interesting for sure. And I'm just checking. So the game is actually November 10th. I thought it was in December. It's actually November 10th. So it's not the Giants after the Giants bye week. So anyway, we're a long ways off, and I'm sure that we will be talking again for the crossover show when it comes up. So I want to thank you for coming on, Giant fans. I want to thank you for listening. And we'll have one more show for you this week as we continue our summer schedule here for the next several weeks on Locked On Giants. For John Butchko, I'm Patricia Traina signing off.